Sir Henry Curtis here, welcoming you to another No Plan, No Script, No Bullshoney podcast. Swallow the red pill, put on the sunglasses, and prepare to see this particular physical world as it truly is, instead of the false view those running this world are projecting into your eyes and brain. Today's podcast is about gangs, particularly the gang you hire to protect yourself. Yes, I'm talking about what some people call our finest, our first responders, our heroes, police. And yes, they are a gang. How do I define gang? Well, they fly colors. That means they're wearing gang colors. They carry weapons, absolutely for sure, except in the UK. And even then, they have to call in special people with weapons. So they fly colors, they carry weapons. They harass and intimidate innocent people, and they extort protection money from landowners and business owners. Oh no, you say, that's ridiculous. Please don't extort protection money. Well, what do you call your taxes? Your property taxes. That's how most police are paid for. The interesting thing is nobody really looks at it like that, except they're a gang. And I'm serious. They are a gang. Supposedly we hire, although nobody ever asked me, we hire them to protect us. But do police really protect us? No, they don't. Police don't draw their guns. They draw chalk lines. Well, they draw their guns if you're if you're an innocent person and they don't like you. Or sometimes if you're doing a bad thing. I'm sure there are some justified police shootings. I was reading today about a guy who was reaching in his pocket for chapstick and a cop shot him in the leg. Good thing he didn't kill him. At least the cop was a good shot. This particular cop has already been involved in many different incidences, including one in which the township he represents had to pay $67,000 to a guy he and three of his buddies beat the crap out of. Anyways, to get to the police thing first, we have to understand civil government. And the best definition I've read is one from Gary North at GaryNorth.com. And he says, all civil government is originally based on warlordism. And that's what he teaches in his homeschooling program called the Ron Paul Curriculum. So a bully gets together a gang. The gang terrorizes local people. Finally, local people get enough of it, and they either buy off the gang or else they hire another gang to replace the first gang. A fantastic movie about this, and absolutely my favorite movie ever, is The Seven Samurai, written and directed by Akira Kurosawa, 1954, black and white, in Japanese, with English subtitles. You will feel every single emotion a human can possibly feel when you watch that movie. It's absolutely terrific. Anyways, all civil government is based on operational agreements between warlords and their victims. Warlords surrender some control over their victims in order to reduce the cost of tyrannizing them. Does that sound familiar? Like property taxes? Okay, the question is this. What kinds of limits will a victimized citizen successfully impose on the warlords? Also, when they do impose these restrictions, they will be tempted to participate in the looting process. That's just human nature. It's greed. There's always a quest for new victims to loot. That's why townships do whatever they can to expand their boundaries and to get developers in to build houses, because they can loot the developers for development fees, and they can loot the people who buy the houses in property taxes. So this is what civil government is about. On the one hand, you try to reduce the amount of theft and tyrannizing that your local warlord imposes on you. You may choose to try to get involved in the process by running for office or whatever else. You may vote in a new warlord, but all civil government is warlordism of one kind or another. And Dr. North is certainly correct in my view. Now, I've got a few things to say about police in particular. One, I have an interesting experience whenever I interact with police. They always think I'm one of them. I guess I'm slightly larger than average. Well, not in every department, unfortunately. However, I'm slightly larger than average. I exercise and look like it. although I have what might be called a bit of a donut-eating physique. And so whenever police pull me over, the very first thing they ask me is what I do for a living. Every single time they ask me, and it doesn't matter if I have facial hair or long hair, short hair, it doesn't matter how I'm dressed, the first thing they ask is what do I do for a living? In fact, when I meet police in social situations, they give me a nod. There's a certain look or a nod or whatever it is that police have for each other. When an undercover investigator meets up with a not undercover investigator, or sometimes another undercover investigator, there's a look they have. When an undercover investigator is approached by a uniformed officer, that's called bubbling in the trade. So if you're undercover and you're watching somebody, which is called surveilling a location or a person, and police walk up to you or drive up to you and say, hey, what are you doing here? Then you flash your badge, whether it's private investigator or whatever, police, and that's termed bubbling. And the person who's undercover tells his or her superiors or writes in the report, hey, we just got bubbled. So there is a look that police give each other, and I get that all the time, all the time. In social situations, I can remember one cop who was uniformed who did not believe that I was who I was. At the time, I was in college with a good friend, and we were playing cards, and this particular officer thought that I was Internal Affairs, and I was trying to catch him because he liked to smoke marijuana, and he figured that he was in big trouble for that and that I was an investigator. It didn't help that I knew an awful lot more about firearms than he ever did or ever would. And on a few other subjects like that, that didn't help my cause at all. For well over a year, he refused to smoke if I was in the room. And I didn't care if people want to smoke. That's fine. It's up to them. We're just playing euchre. And it's not like we're playing anything for money because I don't gamble. When they played poker, I didn't show up. Anyways, I look like a cop. I'm often mistaken for a cop, especially by cops and ex-cops. I ask cops all the time, do I look like a cop? And they say, oh yeah, the way you move, the way this, the way that, and everything else, people just think you're a cop. That's bad if I go into certain situations. Certain establishments that serve adult beverages, there are people in there who would not want me to be around in those social situations. So I have to be very careful where I go and how I act and who I associate with. There's a certain thing with police, though, and you might be offended if I call them a gang. However, those who know, and even other cops, will say, yeah, we have a gang. It's a gang. They have to associate with each other. They can't really go associating with others. They develop over time an us versus them mentality. I'm told this is taught now in police academies. It's us versus them. And certainly when I see the militarization of police, I am inclined to agree with that, even though I don't have any experience. I prefer to look at what people actually do instead of what they say. I think that's a more accurate gauge. So the militarization of police and the way they treat civilians, you know, especially, oh, I'm a taxpayer. Yeah, that's like the absolute worst thing you can say to a when you're interacting with one. I pay your salary. That's a guaranteed way to get a ticket at the very least, if not a beating. The issue with police is, I mean, you're hiring a gang to protect you. That's what civil organizations such as municipalities or states or provinces or countries, they're hiring a gang member, someone they want to look after them, protect them from whatever, which is, I'll get to the protection bit in a minute. So you want someone who's fair and law-abiding and just and all that stuff, and yet you have a job in which they have to be tough and they have to be jerks sometimes, and that means you attract jerks. Now, there are all kinds of psychological screening, supposedly, to keep the wrong kind of person from getting in to becoming a police officer. And yet, there is an increasing number of incidents that demonstrate that the wrong kind of people are becoming police officers. Now, there's also a shortage. If you go in the States, there are billboards looking where cities are looking to hire police officers. That's probably because they get paid crap. Where I live, a first-year constable makes $70,000 or $80,000 a year. That's really good money, considering there's been one shooting in the last, I don't know how many, 10 years or whatever it is. That's really good. And they want the same money as cops in Toronto. When I lived in Toronto, there were shootings every day where I went to school. There were so many shootings, they weren't even reported. Usually black-on-black crime, which is that's a subject for a whole other podcast, sorry. But when my black friends from college would get shot at regularly, just walking through their neighborhoods, which, I don't know, seems crazy to me. It seems kind of silly that somebody in a sleepy, remote, rural town would be paid the same as a cop who responds, if they even get called, to shootings in the big city. However, they say, well, we have the same training, and therefore we deserve the same money. Yeah, well, you know, that's like saying doctors who all have the same training all deserve the same money. No, they don't. Some are better business people, and some are better doctors. And in a small, sleepy, rural township, you don't face the same danger as the people who face it every day in the big city. Regardless, being a cop is not even on the top 10 most dangerous professions. Fishermen, construction workers, those guys are all on really dangerous jobs. If you look at the statistics, cops doesn't even make the top 10. Not even. Oh yeah, they might get shot and they get risky and blah, 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 and they interact with people. But so what? If you don't want to do that, don't become a cop. Which is my point. The wrong kind of person who wants to join a gang, carry weapons, swag around, harass and intimidate people, often gets into the job. It's very easy to find that. Now, I'm not saying citizens are all wonderfully nice people either. They do the aforementioned things. Oh, I pay your salary with my taxes, blah, blah, blah. And it's very difficult for the human brain to admit it's doing something wrong. However, we are in the wrong. The best way to avoid that is to not be wrong. If you don't like a speed limit, don't speed. Go lobby your township and have that speed limit increased. Now, speed limits is a whole nother subject for a podcast. It's kind of silly, these arbitrary things. Anyways, let's get back to cops and as a gang and their issues. I just don't understand why we need cops as much as everyone says we do. I'm all for personal responsibility. I want to accept responsibility for my own safety. When I walk out the door, I look up. I look left and right. When I'm crossing, it's just like crossing the street. I have what's called situational awareness. And if you're interested in this, look up the late Colonel Jeff Cooper and his situational awareness codes. Most people walk around in condition white. They're oblivious to what's going on, especially with smartphones. And if they're wearing earbuds and looking down at their smartphone screen walking around, they deserve whatever they get, in my view. Then there's yellow, and there's very... Look up Colonel Cooper. I'm not going to go through it. Most people are walking around in condition white. Some of us who pay attention to what's going on, we're walking around in yellow, so we're always on guard. And I'm not saying you have to be paranoid. I'm saying... And you certainly don't have to be predator. I'm saying that you just be aware of your surroundings. If you look at videos of carjackings and stuff, the people who survive are those who were paying attention in the first place. And you're much better off. People who get wiped out by the drunk or the old person who has a heart attack or the old person who just has a brain fart and wipes out, and, you know, 15 people standing at a bus stop, the people who are at the bus stop are probably not paying attention. I'm not saying they deserve to get wiped out by the old person who's too old to be driving. I'm saying deserving has nothing to do with it. If you pay attention, then you can figure out when something is going to go wrong most of the time. Okay, so getting back to cops, do we need them? Well, absolutely. All you have to do is look at situations when there are no cops. My issue is that the way we're raised, at least in North America, is that we want a referee on the playground. And that's what cops do. That's what they're our gang, and they are the referees. Are there good ones? Yes, absolutely. Lots of them. Most of them, in fact, I'm pretty sure. I don't like the attitude, and I don't like the way they treat people. And I've had friends who have been treated horribly. I could tell you stories all day about some of the absolutely nasty, nasty stuff, which is completely unnecessary, that police officers do, often at the direction of politicians. That's a whole nother thing. Someday I'll tell you about my friend Bruce Montague, what has been done to him. There are others too. I think my biggest issue with police is that if I defend myself, I'm going to be arrested. And they don't care. Their job is to arrest people and then let the court system figure it out. The problem with that is that when you're arrested, you're now looking at legal fees. You're also looking at your name in the media for having been arrested. And most people are too stupid to think anything other than, oh, he must have deserved it if he was arrested, because they never arrest innocent people, which is total nonsense. I'll give you a few names of innocent people. Bruce Montague. There was that boxer whose life was ruined in the States. Hurricane Carter, that's it. Donald Marshall, David Milgaard, David Chin in Toronto, who was arrested for doing a citizen's arrest on someone who'd been stealing fruit from his fruit stand in Chinatown, which is ridiculous. Oh, and what about Ian Thompson, Port Colborne, Ontario? Guys in masks firebombed his house on camera, and he, being a firearms instructor, took a shot over their heads to scare them away, then called the police. Stupidest thing he could have done, actually, because they arrested him and threw the book at him, did everything they could to try and bankrupt him through legal fees and have him put in jail for years and years and years. Fortunately, very fortunately, after tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees, he was acquitted. Now, what does that teach us? It teaches us, A, that don't call the cops when you have a beef with someone trying to firebomb your house. Just shoot them and bury them yourself. Realistically, I know that's bad. And don't say, I'm being facetious. I am not counseling you to break the law. Do whatever you want. However, I know I would not call the cops if that was the case. However, I think it's more prudent in the beginning to not get into a beef with your neighbors so that they hire thugs to firebomb your house. That's another story. The second thing is, by going after Ian Thompson, the prosecutors and the provincial government, which is the Liberal Party of Dalton McWimpy and Kathleen McWinty, they have demonstrated they're terrified that we might realize we don't need them. We can defend ourselves, and if we do defend ourselves, then we can get in a lot of trouble for it, which makes no sense. Anyways, that's enough ranting about police for now. I could go on forever about this one, but I'm not going to. Thanks for listening to the No Plan, No Script, No Bullshoney podcast. This is Sir Henry Curtis signing off until our next time together. May your Schwartz go with you.